Good evening, sir. My name is Steve. I come from a rough area. I used to be addicted to zombie takeout, but now I am off it and trying to stay clean.
What's up? Welcome to episode 206 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listeners submitted.
Oh, wow.
Jen Miller posted on our Facebook page in reference to last week's episode and said, "So great." Thank you, Jen. Glad you enjoyed the episode. And we got a voicemail.
Really?
Yeah, we mentioned a couple weeks ago that we really needed a voicemail because, you know, we were going to lose the number as of the 15th. Well, we got one, thankfully.
Oh, great.
And, well, it's interesting. I'm just going to play it.
All right.
Dude, this is like Chaz from like, dude, I'm like going about your like mannequin review, dude. Like, wouldn't it be cool when like Andrew Bailey was on like MASH, dude? Or like, wouldn't it be Jack Taylor was on like Designing Women, man? No, wait, that wasn't cool, dude. Or like when Andrew McCarthy was in like, wait, what else was he in again? Hey, like, man.
Thanks, Jazz.
He brought up a lot of points that you brought up. I mean,
well, I mean, they were kind of obvious, and you were really more pushing the whole, you know, Meshach Taylor Designing Women thing.
Yeah, it's true. But, I mean,
and who didn't love G.W. Bailey on MASH?
Who else would associate him with Rizzo from, you know,
well,
MASH?
Yeah, I mean, that is my go-to for him, admittedly. But who else could remember anything Andrew McCarthy has done? Actually, I don't know that I would have remembered Mannequin if we hadn't reviewed it. Actually, I don't know if I would have remembered Andrew McCarthy.
Honestly, yeah, off the top of my head, what else has he done?
If we hadn't reviewed that movie last week, I don't even think the name would have rung a bell.
Did he do Weekend at Bernie's?
Possibly, yes. I think he may have.
What's it with him and inanimate objects?
Hmm. Anyway, on to this week's movie, which is from 1999, Office Space. And of course, the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Occupational Hypnotherapy. Just because you can put words together doesn't mean that they'll actually mean anything.
And also brought to you by Conjugal Visits. Someone to conjugate with. Required.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think this is probably one of the easiest ones I've had in a while,
yeah,
huh? We have a man who hates his job. He's in a, you know, the usual cubicle farm, and he really not sure what he's going to do with his life if he doesn't just waste away at this job, you know, for the rest of his life. His girlfriend, who everyone has the sneaky suspicion is cheating on him, makes him go to an occupational therapist.
Occupational hypnotherapist.
Oh, yes, an occupational hypnotherapist who puts him into a trance and dies of a heart attack in mid-trance. But just that moment of feeling free was enough for him to be the impetus for him to just pretty much slack off at work. Yeah, just check out, you know, say no to his boss that had him working on the weekends, you know, without any notice or anything like that. And winds up also ignoring his girlfriend and breaking up. And of course, she was cheating on him. And finally, getting up the nerve to ask out that girl that was working at the Friday's Tchotchke's place, played by Jennifer Aniston, you know, go out with her. So it seems like his life is well on track, but of course you wouldn't have a movie if it was the usual thing that happens at these cubicle farms. They're bringing in consultants, and man, have I lived through that before. Of course, consultants only mean one thing. People are getting laid off. Unfortunately, his hardworking friends are the ones that are getting laid off. So they come up with a caper. Well, actually, they don't come up with one, do they? They took one from Superman
Borrowed
3.
One, yeah.
To take fractions of a penny from the current, install viruses in the system that will root the fractions of pennies that they round up to a bank account of their own. And of course, it works too well. Mm-hmm. They freak out, and he resolves to take the blame, and really, you could say from there, hilarity ensues.
Yeah, you're kind of forgetting an important subplot, but...
Wow, that's the general plot of the movie, of course. The subplot, of course, I think you're referring to, is the quiet, mumbly mm-hmm. Milton.
Yes.
And his beloved stapler.
Yes, and I gotta say, right off the top, I'm a huge Stephen Root fan. The man is a genius.
I we use so many other movies to compare... like what would you say this was in the world of comedy, this movie? Like what
genre?
What epic, I mean, just the cast that he's thrown together here, the script he has for it, it's just ridiculous.
Oh yeah, although a lot of the cast weren't terribly known at the time.
No,
Jennifer Aniston was big because this was right in the middle of Friends.
This was Jennifer Aniston and a couple dudes from Mad TV.
Yeah.
Those are the only people really knew from this.
And Diedrich Bader from Drew Carey. I think that had probably started.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
By this time.
That was kind of amazing because I kind of was like, I'm not really a big fan of the Drew Carey show at the time. And then seeing him, and he was just so cool.
Yeah.
But Gary Cole, of course.
Who is... done quite a bit. He's one of those actors, you know who he is, but you don't really know what he's done. It's hard to, you know.
As soon as I glanced at his IMDb, it finally, yeah, reminded me where I saw him first. And of course, it was the show Midnight Caller.
Yeah, same here.
And I was like, that was him?
And getting back to Stephen Root, News Radio.
Yes.
And I love him in everything I see him in.
And various Klingons on Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't recognize him under the makeup.
Of course. And his performance of Milton was just pitch perfect, because normally he is kind of this mumbly, quiet guy, but you can see the rage building and that great falling down moment with the cake.
Oh, man.
Because you know what's coming after that cake incident.
Yeah.
Well, but you don't exactly know how it's going to happen.
The stapler, and really, and the real subplot with him, of course, is that he had been laid off who knows how long before this movie had even started, but they had a glitch in payroll that was still paying him, and the consultants, of course, decide to, as they say, fix the glitch, to which they then, of course, just do more horrible things to him.
Right.
Without paying him, even.
Basically, to get him to stop showing up for work.
Right. But he's not going to, you know.
Now, it should be pointed out that this movie predates The British Office by 2 years.
Very true.
And I think was probably a big influence.
Definitely.
Of course, probably a big influence on this movie is the fact that it's really just an adult version of Clerks.
Yeah, you could definitely see that.
It's Clerks in an office.
I think Judge was going, of course, yeah, I don't think we said this off the top. It's Mike Judge, mm-hmm. who's the creator and, you know, director of this,
yeah.
From Beavis and Butthead.
And Idiocracy.
Right. And this is, I mean, you can really, after doing Idiocracy not that long ago, the two really do go very well together, because he's saying... He's talking about a lot more than just office culture in this movie. I think he's talking about American culture.
Oh, yeah.
Chachos. From one end to the other. Yeah. What passes for customer service, what passes for even just any general discourse.
I've got some trivia about that. The setting of the film reflected a prevailing trend that Judge observed in the U.S. He said, "It seems like every city now has these identical office parks with identical adjoining chain restaurants."
I don't know about cities, though, really. I mean...
Well, we've got plenty of those chain restaurants around here, and office parks, for that matter, and it's not exactly a city.
Right, exactly. It's more of like your mid-level towns kind of thing,
yeah.
Which they now classify them as cities because they're so heavily populated.
Mm.
But, right, I mean, I was working at Micro Warehouse when this was out. Or, I mean, yeah. A bunch of us that worked in that office park from Lakewood just came over to watch this film after work.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there were a couple of very pleasant surprises in the film. I forgot John C. McGinley was in it.
Oh, no. This is the first thing I ever saw him in. And I remember the Bobs.
Mm-hmm. Very underutilized, though. Actually, all three of the actors I'm going to mention were underutilized. Mike McShane as the hypnotherapist was great, too.
Well, yeah. And he was very underutilized.
Yeah. And I know him from the British version of Whose Line Is It Anyway? He was a regular on there.
Right.
And also Orlando Jones.
Just his one scene, yeah.
I had no idea he was in this. I was just glad to see him in it.
Oh, definitely. I remember when I was teaching, and of course I was teaching like 4 or 5 years after this, but it was in a high school, and one of my students just walked into the class saying, "I was once addicted to crack cocaine."
Nice. And it should be pointed out that both Orlando Jones and David Herman, who played one of the leads.
Michael Bolton.
Michael Bolton, yes. How can I forget that?
Yeah.
Are both Mad TV alumni. In fact, they were on Mad TV before this,
right.
Before this movie, by a few years.
Right, that's why, I mean, that it was pretty much billed like that. It was Jennifer Aniston and the two dudes from Mad TV. Those are the only people that anybody really knew before going into this.
Right. And back to Mike McShane for a moment, and then that scene with the occupational hypnotherapist, which I've looked up and it doesn't really exist.
No.
I just had to look it up to be sure.
Yeah.
I really didn't think he was going to get to one in that scene. Because he's counting down from three to bring Peter out of the trance.
Yeah.
I expected him to drop, because you can see him, you know, waving his hand and kind of looking like he's having a heart attack as he's, you know, counting down from three. And I fully expected him to keel over before he got the one. He just gets the one and then keels over. So that was an interesting surprise. I didn't quite see that coming. And the only other thing I didn't really see coming was the ending, the result of Milton's falling down. That was a surprise, because I'd seen the movie before, but it's been ages, and I'd pretty much forgotten everything but the basic premise.
It acts as a deus ex machina, sort of.
Yeah, but a very amusingly surprising one.
Of course.
Especially since you're seeing Milton take this turn and wondering what he's going to do, and there's no hint at it.
No.
He just, you know, he's in the office late one night, and you don't know why, and then the next...
Not really. I'd never noticed... I don't know how many times I've seen this movie. I had never really noticed it, because I don't think I've ever watched it with headphones until last night. That he says what he's going to do, I don't know how many times throughout the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he
and
does
his mumbling.
Reference it.
He says it multiple times.
Yeah.
I never noticed that. I think I caught it once.
I noticed it this time several times, but I just kind of put it aside. I didn't think you would actually do it.
Right. But yeah, knowing how it ends, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, he said it like again.
Yeah.
But no, when you're not wearing headphones while watching the movie,
you
don't
can't
really
understand
catch
what
it.
He's saying.
He's mumbling it. I think I caught it once. And I thought it was towards the end of what he was going to do at the resort. But I don't even think he said it there. But he does say it like 6 times in the movie. Like when they're taking the stapler from him, when they're forcing him down into the basement, when they don't give him the cake. He says it over and over again.
Yeah.
And yeah, I never noticed that.
Now, the one thing about it that did get a bit predictable was right after the plan went bad. Because they have this plan to rip off the company. And, of course, there has to be a complication.
Well, yeah.
And then it got a little predictable for me. Kind of the way they were kind of fighting each other and kind of everything was falling apart.
Yeah.
up until the ending, which we're not going to spoil. Although the printer destruction scene is an absolute classic. It was really the only scene I could remember from the movie.
We actually, there was a fax machine at one place I worked at when they replaced the fax machine finally. And they're like, yeah, so what are we going to do with the fax machine now that we have the new printers? I'm like, you know, we're probably just going to toss it or whatever. Oh, could I have it? And they're like, really? What would you want to do with it? Yeah. And yeah, I brought it a baseball bat. A couple of us went out behind the store and just beat it to oblivion.
Incidentally, in that scene, Peter never actually takes a shot at it.
No.
He just hands the bat to the other two.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were the ones who were having a problem with it.
It was his gift to them.
Yeah.
Because he was, he was still working there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, a point that they made, too. He was the screw-up, but they were promoting him.
Right.
And the two guys that were working hard were getting laid off.
Another thing you neglected to mention in the summary, after he has this incident with the hypnotherapist where he kind of checks out, he becomes very honest with his bosses, and it actually manages to push him up the corporate ladder without any effort on his part. Literally no effort.
The straight shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think you're right. I think they could have used the consultants more, the Bobs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Paul Wilson is just always a pleasure.
Yeah. But again, you said it was the first time you'd seen McGinley. Before this, it was Highlander 2, and I think that was probably about it.
Well, yeah, I had no idea he was in Highlander 2 until we watched it again. I'm like, oh my god, that was the only bright point of Highlander 2 was seeing him.
Yeah. And I didn't know who he was until Scrubs, which I saw, years later.
Yeah.
So he was probably fairly unknown at this point, which is why he was underutilized.
Yeah, but this one stuck out in my mind, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I watched Scrubs because of this movie.
Now, Judge actually hated the ending and thought the entire third act needed a rewrite.
I wonder what he would have done instead.
Yeah. I guess that does get a bit predictable, but the ending is brilliant. And I think the printer, or copier, actually, scene is in that third act.
Really? I would say second. I don't know.
You're probably right, since that had to be a scene that Judge put in there deliberately.
Yeah. All I'll say about the ending, though,
mm-hmm.
is if you think about it, and like when he has his second thoughts, mm-hmm. and then the next day with Milton, the door was never locked.
You're right.
There's a lot of really funny things that I think he did intentionally.
Yeah.
Peter never checks the door. He tries to jump underneath it to reach in.
That's right.
But yet Milton
just walks right in.
There's all sorts of hilarious. I mean, who names their computer virus?
Yeah. And honestly, just talking about it that casually was not a wise thing to do. Oh, and speaking of being unaware, they're talking about conjugal visits in the event that they might go to prison.
Right.
And basically, they allay one of the main character's fears of going to prison by mentioning conjugal visits. Thing is, conjugal visits only work if you, as you said, have someone to conjugate with.
Right. They don't provide some chick to come and visit you for a conjugal visit. You have to have a wife.
I don't know if that was something that the judge put in as a joke.
Of course he did.
Or, okay, yeah, that he didn't, they didn't think of this. Very subtle joke. I gotta give him a lot of credit for that.
They were so bad at all of it that they somehow thought money laundering would help them.
Yeah, true.
With money stolen. Like, they would just switch the money for some other money, even though it wouldn't get traced back to them somehow.
Yeah.
And, like I said, naming the virus.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
It's actually, if you think about it, the most inept heist movie ever made.
Yes. Yes, it is. The heist is really just almost a subplot, just it's just kind of the mechanism to bring it all to an end.
Yeah. Oh, also, the iconic red stapler, coveted by Milton, basically his the love of his life, practically.
Yes.
Was created by the prop department. They needed a bright enough color to be seen on film, and they chose red. After the film was released, Swingline made a red stapler. They put it out because of this movie.
Yeah, they had never, or at least the time, didn't make one. So yeah, it was just for this movie.
Oh, and also Fox hated the rap music in the movie. They only went along with it because of a focus group.
But what else would they have put? And come on, the rap music was hilarious. Two scenes that they used it were just, it made it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Particularly the copier beatdown.
Yes, the copier beatdown. I mean, and I walk out back up with your ass with the resurrection, and the very
damn, it's good to be a gangster.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think of that one. And the intro where he's he's like all Michael Bolton's all badass in the car, and then a black person is walking up to sell flowers,
turns
and he's
it down.
Oh yeah, I'm his head down. I'm not listening to that. And then he walks away. Oh right, yeah. And then even of course the cover of Take This Job and Shove It at the end too. So yeah, just let the guys that make movies make the movies, Fox.
Well, actually, this was Judge's first movie, and he didn't make. He made the decisions, but he relied on his crew a lot. He said,
"Really?"
Because he'd only done animation up to this point,
right?
And he felt he wasn't really prepared to make a full live action movie, so he leaned on the advice of his crew a lot. He says, and he really credits them with the quality of the movie.
It is kind of nuts to think about it. I mean, he was just doing animation for.
Mm-hmm.
Right before this, and had never done anything live action.
And that's the interesting thing to me, is this was his first movie. Idiocracy was later. To me, this is a lot better.
Well, this, I think, is funnier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're not thinking about the whole implications of what's going on, everything.
Right.
Idiocracy really was more about a warning.
Well, yes, but that's the other issue with Idiocracy, is it's very heavy-handed. He kind of slams you over the head with the warning.
Yes, he does.
There's a lot in here, as we were just pointing out with the conjugal visits joke, that is very, very subtle.
The planning to plan.
Yes.
Whiteboard in the background, which is so corporate.
I mean, the whole, you know, tchotchkes thing is a little heavy-handed, but it plays well.
And it's just all about the insincerity that he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. How much flair you have.
That passes for fun and excitement. Just people just going, hey!
And the other guy who worked there, what was his name? The blonde guy?
Oh, I can't remember.
But perfect casting. He's just so irritating.
Yes. It
works perfectly.
And of course, Mike Judge himself as the manager.
Right. And I think he had another cameo, but I can't remember what it was.
Did he?
I'm reasonably sure. He's kind of off in the background somewhere in another scene, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I'm done with my notes.
I am as well.
All right, on to sequels and remakes.
There better not be.
After poor box office, the movie gained cult status on video. Mike Judge has said more people talk to him about this movie than any other project he's worked on. Judge was offered a chance to make a sequel, Office Space 2, still renting, but said that he had been through enough anguish over the first one that he didn't want to put himself through that experience again. Making this was so stressful, he decided not to make a sequel.
I love that this is, you know, a one-and-done thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There need to be more movies
Absolutely, we've said that many times.
Get what they, you know, need to say what they say and then get out.
Right. All right, on to brains.
The most anticlimactic brains ever, I think.
Yeah, definitely. That's why in that interview, a couple of days ago, I posted an interview from last year we did with the Crazy TV Talk podcast that I'd finally gotten around to listening to. And early on in the interview, you know, you talked about how we avoid love fests because they get kind of boring. And you listed this movie as a probable love fest that we were probably going to avoid.
Of course.
And so, yeah, the thing is... For me, I can't find a flaw in this movie.
Yeah.
But it doesn't quite sing for me either. It's not amazing, so I'm going to go 4.5.
Really? I think this could very well be surpassing Holy Grail as the funniest movie of all time. Best comedy ever. So it's definitely a 5.
All right. What have we learned?
That's good to be a gangster.
I knew that was coming. I actually had that in my notes until I realized that you were going to say it. And I realized a couple of things. Road rage can lead to some very interesting profanity choices. And, of course, hypnotherapy can lead to grand larceny.
You know, the one guy that I wish that did more work is Samir.
Yeah.
I really liked him in this, too.
Well, there are a lot of people who I wish had done more. David Herman. He's done some minor stuff here and there, but he's never really had a breakthrough.
He's been about the same character anytime you see him.
But he's really good at it.
He is. He is very good at it.
And Ron Livingston never really had a breakthrough either.
His big thing actually is Band of Brothers.
He's worked steadily, but he's never really had the big thing.
Band of Brothers was his... actually what people would know him for more than this even, maybe.
Yeah. Well, like I said, this didn't do well in the theaters. It did well
right.
in the video.
Right.
All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing Megapython versus Gatoroid, one end to the other.
Yeah.
This one notable for featuring both Debbie Gibson and Tiffany, and there's a catfight scene.
Of course.
And if you were born after 1980, you have no idea who I'm talking about.
Someone's got to remember them.
Well, yeah, if you were born in the 70s, you do, I'm sure.
Yeah, I guess so.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. Up through 210, Blue Velvet. We're probably going to have to add some more soon.
Yep.
We're getting close. You also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And, of course, the recommendations list. Obviously, this was a no-brainer, to the point where we were reluctant to review it about a year ago. You can also email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01, or for the alphanumerically challenged.
You can go fuck yourself.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And if you don't get that reference, go and listen to that interview. We did explain
That's
it.
That's true. I forgot that we did finally explain the Milwaukee reference.
And of course, always remember, never forget. Wherever you go in life, there you are.
I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Good evening, sir. My name is Steve.
Sponsored by occupational hypnotherapy.